comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
Seth Rogovoy's new book is Within You, Without You, a personal exploration of George Harrison's contributions to the Beatles and his solo work, as well as his significant role as a Western proponent of Indian music and beliefs. Through close examination of his guitar playing in the Fab Four and his songwriting both in and out of the Beatles, Seth demystifies the enigma of George Harrison, the most reluctant of rock stars. The book draws on Seth's own insights, as well as those of expert observers, including Beatles filmmaker Michael Lindsay Hogg and English rock singer-songwriter Robin Hitchcock, as well as John Wesley Harding, and dot, 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 the list goes on. Seth Rogovoy is a writer, an award-winning critic, a book author, a lecturer, a teacher, a musician. He has the Rogovoy Report on this radio station, and he was one of our very first guests on the roundtable and continues to be, and we are thrilled for that. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me back.
Delight to have you on the program. This has been in the works for you for how long?
Oh, yeah. Well, it depends. It always depends upon how you count. You know, do I count when I started listening to the Beatles when I was six or eight years old? But really, the applied work on the book itself probably began about 5 years ago.
Yeah,
at least.
I touched on this in the introduction, and it plays a role in the book. So I'm interested in perhaps starting here, which is why is this particular Beatle? And I mean, people can argue about this, but I mean, this is a group. Nobody's more famous. I mean, it's just like they win, right? I mean,
absolutely.
It's just they win. Mm-hmm. So how can there be something enigmatic about this guy?
Great question. And I guess if I'm right, what you're implying is that the Beatles are so well known and so well examined and chronicled.
Yes.
How could there still to this day be something enigmatic about one of the members? But I think the key is we're talking about one of the members, an individual, a person, a human being who is experiencing this. And this is how I believe he thought of it. He was almost like experiencing it just like anybody else.
Almost like an out-of-body experience.
Yes. I mean, I don't think he's ever used those terms, but the terms he did use suggest that sort of feeling.
Because you can never be ready for what they went through, all of them went through, what he went through. Nobody could be ready for that.
It was unprecedented. There was never anything like it.
But meanwhile, also, and the thing you have to keep remembering, and I was reminded of this in reading the book, is that at the height, these are very young men. Mm. These are really young people who are going through this, and they're going through their lives and their natural maturation process, and oh, by the way, they're navigating all this other stuff.
Right. You know, and before they even reach the age of 30, it's done.
Right.
At least the Beatles portion of it is done. Obviously, they all went on to do other stuff to varying degrees. But yeah, it's just so the thing is that because it was unprecedented and because, as I write about, George's particular love when he was a 15-year-old, which is when Paul McCartney first befriended him on the bus.
Right.
And brought him to see John Lennon. You know, George was just crazy about playing the guitar. And what that meant as teenagers in Liverpool in 1959 and 1960, obviously bore absolutely no resemblance to where they would find themselves 2 or 3 years later as a global phenomenon.
But you examine that guitar playing very closely in the book, and I'm interested in what you found fascinating about it and what that tells us about this man from his playing, even at that young age.
Yes, yes. Well, so many different things fascinate me about George's guitar player, especially in the Beatles and also afterwards. But his whole approach was very different from what came before. What came before was very much blues-based soloing, with individual personality. Like, you know, Chuck Berry had a certain sound. And George loved a lot of what he heard. But when it came time for him to play a role in a band, he wasn't interested in having a minute or 2 minutes of blues-based improvising. He saw playing guitar as being a co-composer or a co-arranger to the songs. So what he contributed, and he applied himself to doing this, it wasn't like just on the spot, those intros, those hooks, those riffs, those catchy curly cues of sound, and the instrumental interludes that do, when you listen to the vast majority of the Beatles' recordings, especially in the first 5 years, the sound of the Beatles, that identifiable sound you hear besides their voices, is the guitar. I mean, they were a guitar band.
Right.
Until they started experimenting with other instruments. And so, you know, one thing I gained appreciation, although this book is to enhance appreciation for George Harrison, in my work on it, I actually gained appreciation for Lennon and McCartney and just the utter geniuses they were as songwriters.
So talk about that legacy of Lennon McCartney, who get the credit, if you will, as the writers of the songs.
Yes,
but how they were able to tap into his being George Harrison, his particular skill as a guitar player.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, Lennon and or McCartney at the same time, they bring in a song, which means they bring lyrics, a melody line, basic chords, and they present them to the band and the producer, George Martin, and the five of them work out just who's going to play where and who's going to play what and when. And, you know, with George Martin pretty much having an equal voice amongst the Fab Four. So when there would come up a point in the song where they would need an instrumental fill, and it would be, okay, George, can you do something here? You know, they relied upon him to come up with, when you think of those Beatles, those catchy riffs, George composed them. Now, I don't say this to mean that George should have gotten actual legal credit.
Yeah.
Although one could certainly argue that, but I'm not interested in talking about the legal aspects of it. It's a fascinating topic. But just that it's just one of the things that made George singular in his approach, as opposed to the prevailing approach at the time, which was more of a blues-based approach. People like Eric Clapton, who in all the bands he was in, was basically he would solo to and improvise on blues changes. And that was his style. With some obvious exceptions, he also wrote some amazing composed guitar pieces too. Layla, the most obvious. But George, it wasn't about being flashy. It wasn't about being, look at me, or hear me. It was, how can I serve the song? How can I take this amazing song written by John Lennon or Paul McCartney and on the record elevate it and give it a color, give it a spine to hang everything else on. So, you know, when I go back and listen to the Beatles, I hear, for whatever reason, I don't know why, I hear George. Obviously, I hear everything. Ringo's amazing. They're all amazing. But I hear George to such an extent that it's like, wait a minute. In terms of creating that Beatles sound, he had as much to do. I mean, you could say all four were equal, but I don't think that George is always thought of as a co-equal. And that's part of what the impetus was for me to write this book.
One of the things, Seth Rogovoy is our guest. The name of the new book is Within You, Without You, Listening to George Harrison. One of the things that you point out is that imprint, that moment when you hear George Harrison, that goes from the earliest days of Please Please Me and She Loves You, you know, well into Abbey Road.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and he obviously evolved along the way, got somewhat more sophisticated. At some point, he learns Indian music. And, you know, there are some songs he writes or that other Beatles write that actually have a strong Indian music sound, whether it be because of the use of the sitar, which George learned to play, or whether it's incorporating forms and rhythms borrowed from Indian music. But also, it's just, he became so infused with and immersed in it that there were songs he would write for the rest of his life that if there may not have been anything latently Hindustani classical about it, it was always there. It was there, like you let in with Here Comes the Sun, which doesn't have anything overtly Indian sounding, but the rhythms, especially when they kind of stutter and fall over each other, when it goes ba da 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 da, that's incredibly complicated passage there rhythmically. Ringo tells funny stories about George trying to explain it to him conceptually, and it was like, George, you know, I'm a 4/4 guy, but Ringo was also brilliant and is able to pull it off as if he were a tabla player.
What does that say about the trust they had in each other?
Yeah, I think it says a lot. And that was one thing that really struck me. You know, because you hear a lot about the negative stuff and about the sniping and who's in, who's out, who quit the band when, you know. And there's so many stories and there's so much to tell. I mean, they were four guys in their 20s, basically living their lives every day together, almost the entire day.
Yeah.
And so what was exactly the question again?
Well, I was asking about the impact that it has on just the overall mood of the room of having these four guys working together and what it brings to the overall process.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, as much as people could watch the movie Let It Be or the Peter Jackson expansion,
yes,
Get Back, and as much as you see some quibbling or, you know, some testiness at times, what really I took away from the hours of footage of them rehearsing together and figuring out songs together is a real camaraderie, sense of humor, a love of the music, a love of playing music together when it gets going, that, you know, they were, and this is at the end where they supposedly, I don't know, maybe couldn't stand each other as strong, but they were all itching to do their own things, clearly, because within that year, they all put out their own albums, even before it was necessarily meant that the Beatles themselves were going to break up. But yeah, they set the template for a rock group before the Beatles. Like, let me ask you, and it's not to put you on the spot, it's ask the listeners. Listeners, you've heard of Buddy Holly and the Crickets. Can you name a cricket?
No.
Of course not.
No.
Only like some, you know, really nerdy cricket fan.
Right.
The Beatles were the first group where it was, I don't know if democracy is the right word.
John, Paul, George, Ringo. I mean, you almost say it as one word.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was new. And this was exciting, and it set the template for everything that came afterwards.
Just a slight detour on this. Given his study of Eastern religion and philosophy, we all go down paths for different reasons. But is there a case to be made that this was necessary for him to deal with what he was dealing with in the heady days of the height of that fame and of that band?
Absolutely. I think he was primed for this, and his life brought him to a place where he became very open to it. And by it, you know, we're talking about spiritual beliefs, about thinking profoundly about the meaning of life, the meaning of possible life after death, or what happens after one dies. And it's reflected in his songwriting too, so greatly. He was such a contradiction, and the enigma that we talked about at the very beginning of George Harrison is, here was a guy who was an introvert. Here was a guy who wasn't really comfortable on stage hearing all the screaming. He was a guy who was, you know, although he loved to play the music, and obviously, you know, there are elements of that global fame that he must have loved, you know, his bank account being one thing. You know, but here was a guy also who was a bit of a skeptic and thought, this is all crazy. This is mania. And not only is it mania and psychotic, it's potentially violent. And he thought all along those lines. And he was right all along those lines, as we later were to see.
You write in the book, I just want to touch on this. I want to go back to talking about some of the spiritual nature of his life and work. But as far as being an introvert, you write in the book that it was hard for him to get in a word in edgewise. He was someone who, as I believe you say in the book, he made every word count.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like on guitar, he made every note count.
Right. And that's, yes.
And he was economical, yet lyrical, when it suited the moment, and verbally too. I mean, he's very funny, supposedly.
Yes. Well, you could see that in those documentaries.
Absolutely.
In that material as well, that there was a great humor that came from him. And maybe not as I don't know if outlandish is the word I want to use, but as overt as the others.
Right. I mean, John Lennon was also very funny, but more in a kind of a performative way.
Correct.
Whereas George was just always there with the bon mot.
I'm curious again about the idea of his spiritual journey, the music of when that starts to insert itself into the sound of the Beatles, and helping that define certainly the later sound of the band. You mentioned the song that we led in with, but also throughout, where it is much more apparent.
Yes. Yes. So starting, I mean, one of the key first songs of overtly Indian sound is Norwegian Wood, which is a John Lennon song. But John Lennon was working with George and trying to figure out what should accompany him. And he said, George, why don't you pick up that Indian guitar you've been dragging around?
Right.
George had only recently, a few months before, bought a cheap sitar from a gift shop. And George picks it up and plays what we know of as that sitar line in Norwegian Wood, which totally characterizes the song. And it's a great irony, too, that a song called Norwegian Wood is utterly flavored with Indian music.
Yes.
So it starts entering there. I also believe that even a song such as If I Needed Someone, which is also, both of these are on Rubber Soul, although there's nothing overtly Indian about it, there are no sitars on it, you're starting to hear George use long drone notes, notes that just stay level for a long time, which is a characteristic of Hindustani classical music as opposed to Western music. You know, and then you hear it more overtly on the album Revolver, with the use of Indian music on several songs, and than you on Sgt. Pepper. You've got the title track to my book, Within You, Without You, which is completely performed by Indian musicians.
Right.
And George.
The name of the book is Within You, Without You by Seth Rogovoy, listening to George Harrison. You talk to Michael Lindsay Hogg, who is the director of Let It Be. And we've had him on. He's a fascinating figure who obviously is his knowledge on the subject is unbelievable because he was it was there. But he in your book he talks about how and you touched on this earlier that this was that some of us would look and say, oh, the boys are acting up again. And instead, it's let's talk about the music. Like this is the conversation that we're going to have, and it may not always be pretty, but it's going to be a serious conversation about what the sound is.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't know if you remember, but you know, for those of us who did see Let It Be in its day, that back and forth between Paul McCartney and George Harrison. Where Paul is trying to suggest to George what he might play, and George says, "I'll play what you want me to play, or I won't play at all," kind of thing. It seemed a little testy in Let It Be because it was really closely edited, but in Get Back, when you see the whole lead in and lead out, you see that they are just trying to figure out the problem here, and the problem being, okay, what is George going to play? And you see a Paul McCartney who's just as frustrated, if not more, with himself than he is with George. He's like, he knows he's coming across as overbearing, and he hates being that way. But we also see in these documentaries that there's not a lot of direction in what everybody's doing. It's sort of like, who has an idea at that moment?
Right.
Oh, let's play this. Let's try this. Because there was no producer. There was no George Martin in the room.
So let me ask you about that. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes left, and I'd just like to end on this because I found it fascinating. I've always wondered about this, but they were so often going toward the recording, right? It was working toward the recording. Between we're recording this album, we're going to do this, and this is going to be the recording, which is different from a group going out on the road and playing every club in the world,
right?
And being on the road 247 nights a year,
right?
That's much different.
Absolutely.
Than what they did.
Yeah. After the first 3 years, by 1966, where they had been touring constantly all across the globe, that was it. They were done. They were sick and tired of it. George, no more than anybody, or more than anybody, I should say. And and George, up until the very end, believed that there was no reason the Beatles could not go on as recording artists.
Right.
They could still do their own solo work. But they could also get together. And that was the idea. And even up to near the very end, John and Paul were also planning for something like that. And we'll each get 3 or 4 songs on each album. So George feels better about that. And unfortunately, that's not what came down.
The book is marvelous. It's congratulations. It's beautifully written, and I learned so much about a subject that I thought I knew a little bit about, but it's really it's fascinating stuff.
Thanks.
And congratulations. The reviews are amazing and good for you. Seth Rogovoy is the author of Within You, Without You. I don't have it up on my screen, although I meant to put it up. But any events you have coming up?
Yes, this Sunday.
Yep.
At 2 p.m. In Saugerties, New York, at the Upstate Films Orpheum Theater, I will be doing a reading and a Q&A along with my good friends Holly George Warren, rock biographer,
yep,
and Robert Burke Warren, writer and singer-songwriter. And Robert will bring his guitar and he'll sing some George Harrison songs. So it should be a lot of fun.
Really good stuff. And you can find out stuff, I assume, on your website. Yeah. And don't forget the Rogovoy Report in our next hour.
Like magic.
Just the next hour. It'll be there. Seth, it's always a pleasure to spend time with you. Thank you very much. Congratulations on the book.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Again, Seth Rogovoy, Within You, Without You. The book is published by Oxford. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.